This is Lake Effect from Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Mitch Teich. Thank you so much for tuning in today. For the past 3 years, Americans have been looking back at the Civil War during its 150th anniversary. The war, in many ways, still shapes America today in areas like race relations and the economy. When we look back at key figures in the Civil War, one commonality generally binds them, whether they were on the side of the Union or the Confederacy. They were almost always men. Most of the Civil War stories about women involve the home front and the families left behind by soldiers. A new book by writer Karen Abbott, however, shines a spotlight on four women who were very much a part of the war effort and whose lives are not as frequently remembered today. The book is called Liar, Temptress, Soldier, Spy, and Karen Abbott is with us via Skype to tell us more. Welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me, Mitch.
So if my research is correct, it was the story of Belle Boyd that kind of got this work going for you. You are a Philadelphia native. You live in New York. What was it about a female Confederate spy that started you on this journey?
Well, actually, I lived in Atlanta for a while. I moved to Atlanta from Philadelphia in 2001. And it was quite a culture shock, as I expected, probably as for many northern transplants when they first get to the Deep South. And, you know, there were jokes about the War of Northern Aggression and Confederate flags on lawns and things that you don't really encounter in the North. And I hadn't quite realized how live the Civil War still was to many people down there and how it was still sort of a prevalent everyday facet of their lives. And they really thought about it quite a bit still. And this really was driven home for me one day when I was stuck behind a pickup truck that was had a prominent bumper sticker on the back that said, "Don't blame me, I voted for Jeff Davis." And I was like, wow, you know, there really might be something here. And of course, I immediately wanted to see what the women were doing. You know, we knew what the men were doing, but what were the women doing? And I found their situation really interesting. You know, they didn't have any straightforward access to political discourse. They didn't have the right to vote, of course. What were they doing to, and I'm sure they, you know, the cause was just as dear to them on both sides as it was to the men. So what were they doing? And I did happen upon Belle Boyd, the 17-year-old Confederate girl in Virginia, who opens things up by shooting a Union soldier who threatened to raise a federal flag over her home. And I really was sort of captured by this woman, this girl even, who was just all id. I mean, she had no filter, and she was determined to do whatever she could, not only to help her side win, help the South win, but to make a name for herself. It was sort of a vehicle for her, and I found that interesting.
Right. She's maybe as good a place as any to start. I mean, she was itching to work on behalf of the secessionist from, you know, teenage years. And she just, I mean, that was just the beginning for her.
Yeah, she was this incredibly daring, ballsy woman. And you know, I found one of the things interesting was that people were always commenting on how she was not beautiful. I mean, the cruel physical descriptions of her in the newspapers, some of them even going so far as to calling her a literal prostitute. And, you know, it was this 17-year-old girl, and I just sort of wondered how that affected her. And she really embraced all of it. It was, you know, she was sort of this modern-day Miley Cyrus, or I guess the Civil War era Miley Cyrus, I should say, and and really just sort of went with it. And, you know, but I believe she really believed in the cause and was willing to do anything.
There were really, I mean, let's take maybe a step back. You know, what opportunities were there officially for women in the Civil War?
Well, a lot of them volunteered their time as nurses. They helped wounded soldiers. They opened their homes. They sewed bandages. They darned socks. They made uniforms. They held raffles and bazaars in an attempt to raise money for supplies. And so that was sort of the acceptable, genteel ways women were able to contribute. And of course, some women went a little bit further than that and decided to, you know, risk their lives and risk that of their children's lives to spy and to smuggle. One of my favorite anecdotes was the way women used their crinoline and actually used their physical, you know, dress to smuggle quinine and other medicine and even sabers and pistols underneath their skirts to soldiers. So it was sort of, you know, nobody suspected that women, you know, women took this very confining wardrobe that they were forced to wear during this time and used it to their advantage. And I thought that was a sort of an ingenious strategy on their part.
So Belle Boyd fought for the secessionists. On the other side, the woman that really intrigues me is Emma Edmondson, who fought as Frank Thompson. Not only was she a woman disguised as a man, but she was a Canadian woman. Why did she do it?
You know, she was really fascinating to me, too. Number one, because she was living as a man for 2 years before the war even broke out. About 400 women, it's estimated, disguised themselves as men and enlisted in the Union Army. But I think she was one of the few who actually had some experience passing as a man. And I think that, you know, that was to her advantage. But she had run away from a difficult home life and an arranged marriage that she wasn't interested in at all, and became an itinerant Bible salesman and migrated to the United States. And you know, she heard about John Brown, the abolitionist, you know, revolt and his subsequent hanging, and was really inspired by the idea of fighting for the Union. And while she did not abide the institution of slavery, she said as a Christian, it was against her belief system. She was another one who really, I think, was yearning for adventure. The war was a chance for her to sort of play her role as a man on a larger scale and see exactly what she could get away with.
But of course, not only was the war effort itself dangerous enough, she goes on to serve in a variety of capacities, all the while trying not to get killed by the Confederate forces and not to be found out by her comrades.
Yeah, she really, you know, was fighting a war on both sides, as you said, not only against the Confederates, but just the sort of internal war. I mean, any second she could have been discovered, which could have led to her arrest, and even worse for her, you know, ejection from the Union Army. I think that would have been worse to her even than being arrested. Just the sense of dishonor and the fact that she wasn't able to get away with it, I think, would have really irked her. But she was in, witnessed the bloodiest battle of the war, and was on the front lines as a nurse, you know, dodging bullets to retrieve bodies and help her fellow soldiers. And she was also a courier and delivering mail and delivering messages between generals. And of course, she was a spy. And some of her undercover stories, I thought, were the most interesting bits of research I read, especially the sort of Victor Victoria twist, where here is a woman impersonating a man impersonating a woman. So it was sort of a mind bender there.
And it's funny because along the way, almost at every step of the way in her story in the Civil War, her comrades were saying things like, well, this Frank Thompson is a great fellow. He's kind of effeminate, though.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, she passed that off as, I think, many, you know, the other women and certainly even young boys. I mean, there were, you know, boys as young as 16 or even 15 or younger enlisting in the Army. So, of course, they had smooth faces and squeaky high voices and maybe weren't as physically developed or tall as some of their counterparts. And so that was another reason she got away with it. But my favorite tidbit about her disguise was the fact that, you know, people just had no idea what a woman would look like wearing pants. they were so used to seeing women's bodies contorted in these exaggerated shapes by corsets and crinoline that it was unfathomable to think of what would one look like wearing pants, let alone a full army uniform. So, of course, you see somebody in a uniform, you're automatically going to assume they're a man. So I just thought that was really interesting.
So then your other two heroines served somewhat different roles. Rose O'Neill Greenhow used her, shall we say, female charms to gather intelligence until she came up against a famed detective.
Yeah, I really love the cat and mouse game between her and Alan Pinkerton. You know, I had no idea that Alan Pinkerton played such a prominent role in the Civil War, aside from the initial story of him allegedly saving Lincoln from an early assassination plot. You know, Alan Pinkerton had a team of detectives, and one of the things he was charged with was ferreting out Confederate spies. And one of my favorite scenes is when he conducts a stakeout of Rose O'Neill Greenhow's home in Washington, D.C., you know, and he's in the pouring rain and just seething as he watched this traitorous Union captain come up to her home and then engage in a romantic liaison. Alan Pinkerton is just beside himself with anger and really vows to get Rose. You know, she becomes his main target.
Well, and to be able to see into the house, he's got his deputies who are like hoisting him up so that he can peek into the window.
Yeah, I love that. It was sort of comic relief for me because Rose was a pretty intense lady.
Finally, you write about Elizabeth Van Law, whose story I think is really interesting for a lot of reasons, but maybe most significantly that she was a Northern sympathizer living kind of out in the open as one in Richmond, Virginia, although not exactly. And frankly, I don't know that most of us consider that there were still many in the South who had not favored secession.
Yeah, and she was pretty open about the fact that she was an abolitionist. Her neighbors openly acknowledged that, and she was always sort of regarded with a wary eye. But, you know, when the war began, this wariness turned to danger. I mean, these people threatened to burn her house down. They threatened to kill her. She was followed constantly. And just the fact that she still persevered and was able to outwit all of the Confederate detectives, not to mention her own sister-in-law, who was an ardent Confederate sympathizer living in Elizabeth's own house. And so she's, you know, carrying out these brave acts on behalf of the Union with people literally inside her house who are willing to turn her in.
Well, and at one point, she actually sends one of her servants. Her family was very adamant about allowing their former slaves to essentially earn their freedom. She sends one of her servants to go undercover in the home of Jefferson Davis.
Yeah, it proves how brilliant Elizabeth was, you know, and these women in general, that they were able to use these constructs people have about women. You know, Elizabeth wasn't so much, she was above reproach. And of course, Mary, Jane Bowser, the slave she sends into the Confederate White House, was beneath reproach. You know, she was beneath suspicion. Nobody expected her to be educated or well-read or have a photographic memory like she did. You know, everybody just thought she was this uneducated, bumbling servant. And Mary Jane played that part brilliantly and was really able to benefit the Union Army.
Is it fair to call these four women feminists?
If you define feminism as women sort of taking what is in their power or trying to seize a bit of power to better their circumstances, even if you don't agree with those circumstances or their worldview, I would say so. You know, they pushed along against the boundaries that they were subscribed to them. And in that way, I think it is fair to say that they were trying to use what was at their disposal and some things that weren't at their disposal to better themselves and better their own lives.
But they're not going through this time, you know, demanding women's suffrage at the same time.
No, I think, well, you know, Elizabeth later on did become an advocate of suffrage. And she actually, and I sort of love this about her, she would send in her property tax every year with a protest that she couldn't vote. And it was taxation without representation. So she actually was a feminist in the traditional sense of the word. You know, it's and the others just used what they had at their disposal and try to grab every bit of power they could. And I think in a way that was their idea of feminism.
I would imagine there were plenty of other women who served similar roles, but it strikes me that you were fortunate to have found four who really chronicled their time or were written a lot about by others.
Yeah, I was lucky that, you know, Belle wrote a memoir, Emma Edmonds wrote a memoir, and Rose wrote a memoir and had a European diary of her time when she was sent over to Europe to lobby on behalf of the Confederacy, which was a remarkable journey in and of itself. But the main goal I had with choosing these four women was I wanted to weave a tapestry and tell the story of the war as it hasn't really been seen before or told before. And these women all had a cause and effect, even if they weren't always physically interacting, although Rose and Belle did at some point. Their stories all touched one another. They ran into the same people. There was a cause and effect to their actions. You know, Rose is spying on the Union Army, you know, literally watching Emma Edmonds march up and down. So, you know, her spying affects Emma, for one example. And I really enjoyed making those connections.
Who do you think among the four had the most interesting post-war story? Some of them went on to some really interesting things.
I thought Belle Boyd's was the most fitting, only because she was clearly insane and then ends up spending some time in an insane asylum. And I just love the image of her going on the road, reenacting her glory days. You know, she was sort of this sad figure, but also so oblivious in a way that she didn't understand that she was sad, and she just kept going. And I just admired her. And she was sort of delusional to the end, you know, talking about how she was a virtuous woman and that she never killed anybody, which clearly she did, you know, and then the next breath she did kill somebody. So she was just sort of all over the place. And I just had great fun romping through her mind, I guess.
Well, and for a while there were Belle Boyd impersonators out there.
Yeah, she became sort of a cult hero. You know, I imagine, you know, actually, my husband told me, one of his Atlanta friends said that his daughter today, you know, that his, I guess she's in fifth grade or something, dressed up as Belle Boyd for a class project. So little girls still want to be Belle Boyd.
And it should be mentioned, Belle Boyd went on to die in Wisconsin.
Yes, she did. And she's still buried there in Wisconsin Dells. I think that there was some controversy later on, fairly recently, maybe in the 1990s, about moving her body back to the Shenandoah Valley. But for, so far, Belle is in the Midwest.
It's a much different sort of tourist attraction than the water parks.
Yeah, definitely.
As you did this research and wrote this book, did you feel a particular kinship to any one of these women in particular?
You know, I admired them all in different ways. I admired Belle, as I said, because she was such a free spirit and crazy, and I just had fun following her and seeing what she would do next. She was always a surprise to me. And Emma, in particular, I just thought her story was so poignant. Here's somebody who has disguised herself as a man and enlists in the Army, and then finds herself falling in love with a fellow soldier. And I just wondered how that tormented her and how she wasn't able to sort of find satisfaction with that, and just the temptation she had constantly to tell him her feelings, and she ends up, of course, doing so even with the risks involved.
And he does not give her away.
No. And I thought that was really great and interesting, and also sort of anchored her. You know, she does have this anchor in him throughout the book.
It's really a Civil War story that is unlike any I have ever read before. Karen Abbott, it's great stuff. Thanks.
Thank you so much.
Karen Abbott's new book is called Liar, Temptress, Soldier, Spy, Four Women Undercover in the Civil War. She joined us via Skype. A quick break now, and then we go from the lesser-known story of the Civil War to the lesser-known story of math. This is Lake Effect on WUWM.